Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and this hour we're going to be talking about our brains. The president announced a highly interesting project. It's a brain initiative. He announced it earlier this week, and it's really a mapping kind of project. Consequences could be that it could deal with advances in epilepsy and autism and also Alzheimer's disease. He talked about the project as the kind of government program that can generate jobs, and yet he made a political statement saying that it's at risk because of the federal budget sequester. The plan would be to spend $100 million in the 2014 federal budget, and we thought it would be very interesting to find out about how daunting this task could be. I would think mapping the brain is very difficult, and we'll learn a little bit about how complicated the brain is and how long it would take to map the brain. Our guest is Dr. Uma Wesley, senior scientist in the Department of Neurology, in the Department of Neurosurgery, forgive me, at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Wesley. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave messages there, that would be great, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Dr. Wesley, thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Ms. Dunn, having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. How complicated is the brain?
Brain is pretty complicated. I know it's just a 3-pound mass sitting in our head, but it's extremely complicated, and there are billions of cells involved in its function, and also there are trillions of networks goes on, and everything that happens in the brain that controls our regular behaviors, day-to-day, what we do, what we say, how we interact. So it's a pretty complicated organ.
Just the numbers that you gave us are extraordinary. Billions of cells, trillions of networks. How in the world can you map that?
Yeah, it is not an easy work. It's pretty challenging. But, however, there are pockets in the brain where we can subgroup these billions of cells, specifically as their subtypes like neurons or the supporting cells like glial cells, immune response cells. So individual researcher or group of researchers can work with subgroup of the cells. So that way it could be achievable, but it does take many years of painstaking work from many researchers from all different areas of research.
Mm-hmm. How in the world would you even begin such a task? How do you begin the process of mapping? Would it be one scientist, like you would do one part of the brain, and then you'd have thousands of other scientists looking at other parts of the brain? I don't even know how you do this.
Well, me as a single scientist, probably I would say will not be able to achieve what we want to do. I work with group of scientists, and currently, for example, in neurological department, neurosurgery department here at the University of Wisconsin, we have multiple projects, and this multiple project is led by Dr. Robert Dempsey. He's the department chair. He leads a group of neurosurgeons and scientists. We all work together. We, each one of us, do our own part. So we have expertise in individual areas. Like, for example, I am good in cellular and molecular level of research. Dr. Dempsey is a clinician. He works with patients. And there is Dr. Josh Meadow. He uses his biomedical and mathematical expertise to improve imaging skills. Dr. Vimal Gandhi works on another molecules which can target. Dr. Koh works on tumors, how they can be targeted. So we work as a group, and each project is led by a principal investigator.
Mm-hmm. The idea for the brain, research through advancing innovative neurotechnologies. Did the president propose this week because of some breakthrough that has happened in the past couple of years, some possibility of great breakthroughs if we studied it more? I guess I'm asking why now, why he proposed this now?
The thing is, what I feel is many decades ago, we had no idea how brain functions. And the thought was, once there is a damage to brain, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was understood that there's nothing we can do about it. But last few decades, people have seen, no, that's not true. We can repair the damaged brain. We can improve the behavioral outcome by doing research. And they have identified special types of cells and molecular mechanisms which are involved. And also technology has improved, where we can have a better images inside the brain, like looking at the neurons and their network, also the blood vessels, which play a major role in the normal blood functioning, brain functioning. So we have reached a stage where we are very optimistic to improve these technologies. So I think this is the right timing for this proposed initiative.
I know that you study how neurons are born, how they grow, how they make connect to ions. Do you study that through imaging in the brain? Is that how you look at it? Or do you look at brains from people who are deceased? How do you do this?
Currently, I'm a laboratory scientist, but I do work with other clinicians who use images. We use different approaches. One, imaging approach, and we also use animal models. Currently, we learn a lot about how brain functions, how diseases happen. Particularly, we are interested in looking at stroke and how we can repair the injured brain following stroke, mm-hmm. how we can improve this animal behavior. As well as we are looking at the tumors, neuronal tumors, which can also enter the brain and cause a lot of functional deficits. That we use molecular approach, cellular approach, as well as imaging approach. It's a combined approaches will tell us what's going on in the brain.
Hmm. Some have said that we need to start our more vigorous research with brains that are not as complicated as the human brain, that maybe if we looked more at mice or at rats, we should start there before moving on to what's in us.
Yes, certainly. But amazingly, although this mouse and rat brain seems simple, they have tremendous overlap how our human brain functions.
Oh.
Yeah, there's genes or many, many genes and proteins that are expressed which control human function, also control these animal functions. So they are huge assets for researchers. And we do have certain rules and regulations how we work with these animals. And they are providing us a great deal of information which can be translated to human research.
Mm-hmm. You must every day think, what a piece of work are human beings when all you have to do is look at our brains. They're just miraculous, really, aren't they?
Oh, yes, certainly. And every day we do research and we see something more exciting. We think, oh, maybe this is the way we need to go. And then we go there, we find something else. You know, to tell you the truth, research is like Russian dolls. And you open one, there's another one. You need to keep opening and we have to get to the bottom. And we are not there at the bottom at this, but we have made a tremendous progress in the whole country, whole world. There are amazing experts, neuroscientists working towards this. So, yeah.
So would it be fair to say you're looking at nearly 100 billion Russian dolls? That's a lot of dolls.
Lots of dolls, probably. I don't know if I can say those names, but yeah, I could say something like that. There's so many approaches, so much we need to know. But last 2-3 decades, we have made tremendous progress in this area. And it's amazing how brain or computers can interface with human brain and how patients' day-to-day living can be improved.
We had a human genome project that most would say was rather successful, $3 billion over 10 years. How would you compare these two projects? Would the brain project be much more complicated than the genome project?
It's hard to compare to these two projects. That human genome project was very specific goal, and that there was a specific target. We just have to go get the sequence of DNA after DNA. So that was very specific. In human brain mapping initiative, as such, specific goals, I feel, are not clearly stated. I do know they're more towards improving neurological technologies, such as imaging or computer interface with humans, how they can come up with the ideas. But to do that, we need to go back and study brain at all different levels, as an organ, at cellular level, at molecular level. So it would be different approach, but it does cost a lot more than $100 million, that I can say that.
So initially, is this project way underfunded?
To complete all the goals, yeah, I would think so. Mm-hmm. But this would certainly give a boost to something we need to improve on. The brain research is amazing, and we need to get there. Brain controls everything, day-to-day function, and how human beings behave, their sickness, and how happy they are, how sad they are, how depressed they are. I think we do need to go in this direction.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to an email from Charles, and let me remind people that our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, if you'd like to put your brain to work there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And our guest is Dr. Uma Wesley, Senior Scientist, Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about the announcement by the president of a brain initiative, mapping the human brain to encourage an understanding of our brains, which are enormously complicated and may have implications for how we treat disease and understand diseases like Alzheimer's and how we treat people with paralysis, all kinds of possibilities here. Let's go to an email from Charles. Doctor, will better understanding of the human brain through mapping bring about more effective treatments for mental health patients? I'm thinking of severe depression in particular, and could brain mapping become a tool for more nefarious purposes like mind control or how people vote or think?
I personally think this project may not lead to a situation where we control somebody's brain. Probably not.
What about understanding severe depression, treatments for mental health patients?
Certainly, yeah. I would think it would be helpful because how a human is behaving depends on how brain functions. Brain functions depending on how neuronal network, how all the cells are functioning in the brain. And if we understand this, certainly we should be able to improve treatment strategies for depression and other diseases such as paralysis, which is a cause of stroke, and also Alzheimer's disease. Yes, it would be beneficial to treat patients rather than controlling somebody's brain.
We've seen reports and heard reports when you mentioned paralysis of people who are paralyzed being able to use robotic arms through their minds to sip coffee and to grasp balls, etc. How did we make that kind of advancement? That seems rather like a significant advancement to me.
It is. It is, absolutely. I have seen in my own experience such thing happening. If I may mention, when I was a postdoctoral fellow at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, my mentor, who is also a clinician, very bright scientist, was diagnosed with lateral sclerosis, and he could not walk.
Oh.
And then he sat in a wheelchair, but he came to lab. He went to see patients. He's an awesome doctor, and he helped patients. He helped researchers. After 1 year, he could not use his hands. He was sitting in the wheelchair, but he sat in front of the computer. He gave commands through his voice, and computer took that. And he was able to write a manuscript, publish his work, and he wrote grants for NIH. NIH funded him. He did great. So we were all so impressed with his performance, despite he couldn't walk, he couldn't use his hand. And eventually, last few years, he cannot even talk.
Mm.
So he's in the wheelchair in front of a computer. He cannot talk. He just rolls his eyes, and the computer kind of detects this moment and then finds out what's going on in his brain.
Wow.
And then he communicates. He gives us scientific commands, suggestions, how we go about doing this project. In fact, I visited him 2 summers ago in his house. He's in the bed. He can't talk. He can't move. He just rolled his eyes. 2 hours, at the end of 2 hours, I felt I had a normal conversation with him just because computer was able to interface, communicate with his brain. So this is an example developing technology to understand the brain-computer interface is a good thing.
That is absolutely phenomenal. Please tell me, I don't know if we can even get it so that we can understand that, how in the world that can happen? How does a computer read his brain?
I am not a computer scientist, but so I wouldn't be able to tell the details. There is a communication, there is a movement it can recognize, and probably more technological person would be able to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I am more of a biologist. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I can't get into the details of that.
Well, it's wonderful that you were able to observe that.
Yeah, I send him emails. I send him a Happy New Year, and then he replies to me just because of this improved technology.
Mm. Our guest this hour is Dr. Uma Wesley, Senior Scientist, Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we're talking about the Brain Initiative announced by the President earlier this month, the $100 million brain mapping project that will have, if it's funded at a greater level and there are more scientists involved in this, it could have wide-ranging implications. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dent Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Rick in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning. I'd like to say before I begin here that I have nothing but respect for your guest. What I'm going to say has got nothing whatsoever to do with her. I think she's probably a very brilliant scientist. But I'm totally opposed to this approach. For one thing, there's 100 billion neurons in the human brain, probably trillions of alternate connections. Understanding the human brain is bigger than the Los Alamos Project. It's bigger than trying to understand the universe. There are already 60,000 scientists worldwide studying this problem. That's way enough right now. This is a big science, a big approach to the study of the brain. This is to be organized and run out of a committee in Washington, D.C. This makes it impossible for independent individual scientists to be able to act freely and investigate areas that they think should be investigated. I got a couple more points here.
All right, Lori, why don't we start with those points? Doctor?
Yeah.
What do you think about what Rick said?
Yes, I do. I know. I do. It's not a simple task, and I do agree with the gentleman that, you know, their NIH is already funding several projects related brain research. But however, there are some areas there is deficit and it cannot be used. And I do agree this approach is a good, I do see positive impact, but it's not going to be easy. Yes, dollar is involved, and this needs to be very well thought, and how it is spent is very important, because currently there's so much more billions of dollars have been being spent on patient care because the not improvement in their functional recovery, caregivers need to go through all this. So this might be helpful. And it's not easy, I agree, and it is complicated. It's not done by one or two scientists. There is a team of scientists all over the country needs to work together to make this happen.
He indicated that there were, I don't know where he got these figures, there were already 60,000 scientists in the world working on just this. Is that true?
I don't know if the 60,000, I do not know the number, but there are, there are a bunch of scientists that are working in this country and also in other places in the world. They do. But I still feel there is a deficit in NIH funding for our research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And could you compare it to space exploration? Is it in terms of complexity, in terms of how it would... how much effort it would take and knowledge it would take to get to the moon or you know, to do an international space station. Is it at all comparable?
It's very difficult to compare that. So here we are talking about human beings on a daily basis, and then they are talking about moon, which is in the universe.
Right.
So it would be a hard comparison for me to make, which mm-hmm. is better.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick, for the call. Ross in Madison wants to know about Alzheimer's. Could there be, as a result of this brain project, could we learn more about whether or not Alzheimer's is hereditary, what the difference between hereditary and non-hereditary Alzheimer's is? Would a project like this help to answer those questions, or do we already know the answers?
I don't think we know the answers, first of all. And second of all, my major focus is more on brain tumor and stroke. But I have general idea about Alzheimer's disease. And right now, Alzheimer's disease is costing way more money than treating cancer or heart disease, as we can see today's paper.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be more work done in this area. It might help to relieve or improve the patient's performance, like you said, to take a sip of coffee. They don't need somebody to feed them. So it might be helpful. And if it is hereditary, it's not very clear at this point.
Judy in Minnesota, Marine, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say that I'm very worried about this whole proposal, because it reminds me too much of like funding a new war. I mean, it's a never-ending taxpayer obligation again, which we didn't really have any, you know, input about. And I really think that if all these scientists put their brains and our money towards stopping global climate change, that would do a heck of a lot more good for everybody. And anyway, what good is it to know more about our brain if we all die from drought because we didn't do anything about global climate change? That's what I'm thinking.
All right, Dr. Wesley?
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's a very valid point. I appreciate that. But coming down to this project, if you think of all these diseases, post-stroke recovery, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, we can see we are spending billions and billions of dollars for just for the patient care, because our knowledge in this area is still not advanced to do a better job in treating patients. So we can treat the patient better if we understand how brain functions. And thinking of what's the end for this project, it's hard to say. Yeah, we are initiating, unlike a war where we cannot stop in the middle, this is not going anywhere, or if this is going somewhere, a decision can be made what it's going to cost. So initiative is okay, but progress can be evaluated and then go accordingly to use taxpayers' money or not. So I would think it is a good initiative. Yeah, it is a risky. It's not too simple. But this is not going to be extremely complicated where we cannot stop if nothing happens. So that's how research goes.
Well, it's one of those questions that you just, as a human being, want to know the answer to in a way, don't you? It's like, it is like space exploration in that way. Why do we remember things? Why, how can we help people communicate as a result of just using their brains if they are paralyzed in other areas? There are profound pieces of knowledge to be gained from an elaborate study of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, I agree. That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I see your point, Judy. We only have so much money. Only so much money. When we talk about the size of the brain, do all of us have brains that are 3 pounds, or do some of us have much heavier brains and some much lighter?
I guess it depends on the size of human being. I can't tell exactly if it is 3 pounds for everybody, if it's unlikely.
I was just wondering if you had a bigger brain, if you have more of those neurons and cells, and maybe you might be smarter or not.
There are some studies showing if you have more neurons surviving, better neuronal network will make a person better knowledgeable. But there is no certain specific interaction between, because some small people can be smarter than the big person or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think size of the brain has a direct effect on someone's ability to what they can do.
John in Madison, hi.
Yeah, I'm kind of at a quandary as to what this brain mapping program really is. We know the brain architecture. We know the cell types. The question remains in my head is, since there's 100 billion neurons that have got on average, each neuron has 1,000 interconnections, so there's 100 trillion connections going on in the brain. I understood that the brain mapping was to find out what the signaling was, and I'm just wondering, how do you do this unless you start with certain pathologic conditions, say schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, you know, you can on and on. Are we going in that direction? Are we more trying to find out the genetic correlates to various brain structures in pathologic states? You know, to me, this is such a mind-blowing subject. You've got to be going in specific directions to begin with before you can go on to other
areas.
Yeah,
it's a good question. Yeah.
It's a good question. And I couldn't agree more with you. It's certainly that's the way to go. But right now, with the media, I am not sure how they're going to lead this project. I do know President Obama has hired two great neuroscientists, Dr. Corey Bergman from Rockefeller University and Dr. William Newsman from Stanford University. I believe they would sit and discuss how they're going to approach this initiative. And I agree with you. I think the best way is to go with specific pathological condition and also learn more about healthy brain without any pathological condition. That would be more doable, more practical.
Thank you, John, so much for your call. Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. I heard another scientist say that he thought this was a bad idea because the brain is changing all the time. And it's not a fixed thing like DNA is, but that changes in response to the environment and what you think about and your experiences. I'm just curious. what you think.
I do agree that a lot of scientists are skeptical about this approach. And there is certainly variation between brains and within the same human being, depending on their environment and also age, brain can function differently. So when someone does research, they have to consider all these issues, what we call as controls. So experiments needs to be planned and carried out, taking variation in brain capacity, where they are, what's the environment. So specific disease, like previous gentleman said, it is very specific to, that needs to be taken care, which most research labs do that. So we can eliminate all the variations.
Thanks very much for the call, Sarah. Because of Sarah's concern and some other callers, do you think that there might be difficulties in getting congressional approval for this brain project, Doctor?
I am not sure how it goes in the Congress White House. I can talk more about the science. And so there will be oppositions, there will be discussions, and hopefully outcome will be, I'm a scientist, I am more biased towards funding research, and I do see some positive impact on human life. So hoping this will come through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you mentioned all of the colleagues and what areas they're working in at Madison, when the news came out this week of this project, did you all applaud it? Were you excited about it?
I wouldn't say excited. We were happy with the caution. It's a mixed feeling. It's great. And the next question is, how this funding will be used, and will it be used wisely or just diverted towards one area which may not do much.
Mm-hmm.
So, we do have apprehension about this, although we are happy about this.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Some lines are open for our guest here on the Ideas Network, John in Richland Center. Hi.
Hi. I had a severe head injury 12 years ago where there was structural damage to my brain.
Mm. Oh, sorry.
And the doctors said that part of my brain was dead.
Uh-huh.
I'm saying, even though it's been 12 years, I still have a hard time communicating. Do you have any idea how I can communicate better?
Probably I would suggest you would see a clinician who can give you a second opinion, and I am sure there are ways to improve. Since I don't deal with patients, it would be very difficult for me to provide any more advice. I can talk about the research side. If you're really interested, our leader, Dr. Robert Dempsey, deals with a lot of patients with brain injuries. Probably you might be able to talk with him, or in the Department of Neurosurgery, someone will be able to help you.
So, what kinds of problems are you having, John?
Well, I have a hard time finding the right word.
Mm-hmm.
To say in the right situation. I say the wrong words of the right people and the right words of the wrong people.
Mm.
And it always gets me in trouble, and then they pick on me.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sure there are experts who can help you in this area. I'm sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, John, very much for the call. Brenda in Galena, Illinois. Hi, Brenda.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Brenda, you can talk. You're on the air. I don't know what you're doing, Brenda.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Turn the radio down. Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
I just said to answer the door.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So here we go.
All right.
I just wanted to call to counteract what somebody else had called about and said they didn't know if this brain research was worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think absolutely. So kudos to the doctors,
Thank
kudos.
You.
years.
And why are you excited about it, Brenda?
Well, because it's scientific, and I'm a mathematician by trade, and and I just think this is definitely, you know, worthwhile to have our money spent this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to give kudos to the doctors who are involved.
All right. Thank you, Brenda.
Yeah, thank you. So I just have to mention, recently our PI, Dr. Robert Dempsey, visited Ecuador, and then he came and told me a story about a little boy. When he treated him when he was a little kid, and he could hardly talk, walk, do anything. Now he went back. That kid is doing so well, going back to school. Mom is so happy. So doctors and scientists can make a positive impact. And so we do have some hopes in this direction.
Mm-hmm. And what are your hopes in your area of specialty, particularly in recovering, recuperating, trying to get as many of your faculties back as you can if you suffer a stroke?
Yeah, in terms of stroke, it's all about timing. And most patients, if they come within few hours or so, there is a drug which they can be treated and they do well. But unfortunately, if they come late, there is no effective drug to treat this patient.
Mm.
So currently, our lab is focusing on how we can expand this window of treatment. Can we identify some of the targets of the drugs which can be given to these patients after a day or two and help them improve their functional recovery? So we are testing these ideas, as I said before, in mouse and rat models. And we have seen some very exciting results, and we have identified a couple of molecules which could be potentially used in patients sooner or later. So, yeah, we do have some hope, and we are working together towards that, specifically using stem cells. As you know, Wisconsin University is one of the pioneers in looking at the stem cell function and what it can do. There's a lot of hope for regenerative medicine using stem cells. So that's what we are aiming to use, the stem cells, and we are looking at how we can increase the efficacy of stem cells by regulating the other molecules which control stem cell function. And it's been pretty interesting to do that. And we proposed a small project for NIH, and we have initiative project funded by NIH. We are working on that. Hopefully, we will expand with our colleagues in the department.
Let's go to Jim in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, Jim.
Hello there.
Hello.
Good morning to you all. I think it's an excellent idea. I think the Genome Project was something that was money well spent. It wasn't even totally funded by the government until they realized what a great deal it was, and they got on board, too. It's kind of like going to the moon. I mean, we can focus on this. We can't. I kind of want to do a re-ditto kudos, because that lady at college kind of stole my thunder. She said that, you know, it's good to do this. And you can't really get the whole world on board if you're trying to stop global warming and whatever it is. I mean, I know there's a problem. How are you going to get everybody else in the world involved on the same page? At least this is something we can get on the same page, and we can share data with other people and different scientists. And I think it's an excellent thing to progress. And whenever you're doing something to improve the quality of human life, that's very important, and I think that's what you're doing here. You know, paralysis, stem cell research, Alzheimer's, finding out how to help people with cerebral palsy, MS, all kinds of problems. And there was a guy who said that, you know, why are we wasting our time? We're late, I think. Why are we spending our time? We could save the world first, and I think we probably could do both. If we save a lot of people's health, probably a lot of people would be a lot more healthy and be able to focus on helping us do the other stuff we need to do. So we got to keep everybody healthy as much as possible, as quickly as possible. So I'm re-kudoing the lady that called earlier and said kudos. So I think the brain search is a real good thing.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our guest is Dr. Uma Wesley, senior scientist in the Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about the Brain Initiative that was announced by the president this week. and ask them what you think of it. And trying to find out more information about how complicated the brain is, it indeed is incredibly complicated, and what this mapping of the brain would hope to do, and how difficult it would be to do just that. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Jamie in Arborvitae. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I just had a comment. I've got MS, and I have a parasagittal meningioma, which is a type of brain tumor, I guess.
Mm.
And it's amazing to me that when people are healthy, they think that nothing needs to be fixed. And then when they get sick, they're like, oh, we need, you know, better research into this and better research into that. It just feels sometimes like you're stuck out on your own,
mm-hmm.
you know, without backup because, well, it's like the healthcare thing. Well, we don't need healthcare. Well, no, you've got health insurance and you can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't care. That's how it feels sometimes. That's all. It was just a comment.
Dr. Wesley, would you like to respond?
Yeah, I do see the urge for research is more for someone who is suffering with a pathological condition such as brain tumors or a stroke, and they would always say, yeah, please do something and
mm-hmm.
give us a better drug mm-hmm. as opposed to healthy. So I see the point, you know, why some need this, some don't. So that's what we are trying to achieve as a scientist in the laboratory. You know, we are trying to find out better drugs that way we can improve or prevent some of the diseases and improve their lives.
Mm-hmm. It's always important and sometimes hard to understand what it is to walk in somebody else's shoes, right?
Yeah, oh, certainly, certainly, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Jamie, very much for your call. Paul in Horse Lake, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Yep. I just have a question about, is there a way to submit lists of projects or ideas that could be incorporated with this?
Mm.
Like, for example, there's been research done in the last few years about looking at the amygdala and the Krebs signaling to help with anxiety and alcoholism.
Yeah,
and I'm just
yeah.
wondering, I haven't really been able to find much in terms of where they're going with that.
Right.
Because I have a little bit of both.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'm just wondering, is there a way to submit lists of ideas for, you know, new ideas or research projects to be included in this project?
I think that's a great idea. That's exactly how I feel. But I don't think they have made any specific plans at this point. It would be nice if they open to other scientists and public in the world to submit their ideas and then pick the ones that's best suited, which can be more practical. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen or if someone sits there and decides what to do. It will be a great idea to open
yes.
for everybody to give their ideas.
And what usually happens, the president makes an announcement like this, can we anticipate in the next couple weeks or months that this idea will be, we'll know a lot more about what the plan is?
Probably. I am not sure how what the timeline is. I do know he has appointed two great scientists, neuroscientists. You know, they are best known for their great research, one from East Coast, one from West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
They meet. I am sure they will come up with specific plans, and it'll be available to all of us.
Let's go next to Dagma in Madison. Hi, Dagma.
Yes, the most recent Nobel Prize in medicine was given to two gentlemen. One of them is British, who's done the research for 40 years. It's about turning adult stem cells into young ones, and that can help us with many brain problems like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And since we live longer, there will be far more people with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's a very hopeful area of research. Stem cells for regenerative medicine is, I think, is very hopeful. And we should thank Dr. Jimmy Thompson from our University of Wisconsin, who has done pioneer work in this area. And one thing, we can use adult stem cells which is not going to be any problem using embryonic stem cells, so ethical issues will not arise. And also the beauty of stem cells is we can use stem cells from patients. That way we don't have to worry about immunological rejections and things like that. Yes, so this is a very amazing area of research.
Thank you, Dagma, so much for your call. Susan in Madison writes, it used to be thought that the adult brain wasn't growing and could not recover from injury or stroke the way that a young brain could. Dr. Wesley, could you talk about what we know about that?
Yeah, we do know a little bit, because what happens in adult stem cells, they lose ability sometimes to produce some of the factors of the nutrients, what we call chemokines and cytokines. They will not produce enough for them to survive and also migrate. These stem cells have to move from one site to the injured site to repair. They will lose the ability, or they have the reduced ability. So that's one of the research area we are focusing on, how we can improve this adult stem cell transplantation and their, how we can improve their ability to function. So we are proposing to do combination therapy with the adult stem cell with these certain chemokines and growth factors. When we combine, probably we can expand the efficacy of these adult stem cells.
Mm.
Still, we have hopes to do that. And with our initial work in our laboratory and many laboratories, it has shown efficacies, and it's very hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Gregory in Turtle Lake. Hi, Gregory.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was diagnosed about 5 years ago with Parkinson's, so I do have an interest in this subject. And I just wanted to say that I hope it doesn't become a political, like a Democrat versus Republican problem, because we all have just as much chance, regardless of your political party, of getting Alzheimer's, of getting Parkinson's, of getting a brain injury,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's in kind of a something that's been a problem is the stem cell research. I guess the Republicans are against it a little bit because of the abortion issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope they could all work together to try to solve this thing. I guess that's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Gregory.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So stem cell issue, if we use embryonic stem cell, then question of abortion, all the ethical issues will come into picture. But if we do not use embryonic stem cells, if we improve the efficacy of adult stem cells, it's basically we isolate this from bone marrow. It's very easy to aspirate and get the stem cells. So there will not be any political and ethical issues. So I think that's the way we can still work towards this stem cell therapy approach.
Mm. I've known so many more people who have been diagnosed with Parkinson's. Is that on the rise in this country? Do you know, Dr. Wesley?
It is increasing, but I don't know exact number. I'm sorry. But certainly other neurological disorders are increasing. Stroke incidence is increasing, specifically after the age of 55. Incidence of stroke risk doubles,
mm-hmm.
literally.
Mm.
And again, Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah,
it is slightly increasing, although it is not as bad as it used to be in
mm-hmm.
the past,
mm-hmm.
because of improved care and treatment.
Thank you, Dr. Wesley, so much. It was a fascinating hour. All the best to you.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Dunn. It was my pleasure.
Our guest this hour, Dr. Uma Wesley. She is senior scientist in the Department of Neurosurgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. That was interesting, wasn't it? I wanted to remind you, because the deadline is coming up, and I've forgotten to remind you that I'm going to be heading to Eau Claire on Monday, April 22nd, but the deadline to register for the Western Wisconsin 2013 Listeners Dinner is April 11, which is coming up soon, isn't it? You're invited to come and have a good time. We're going to have a social hour and then dinner. Always good to have dinner. And then I'll be talking. I want to talk. You can, and it's only $25 a person, so I'll try to whip up a good speech, so it's worth it, right? You can register online at www.wpr.org/Eau Claire or call the WPR in Eau Claire studio or office number at 800-228-5615. That's 228-5615. Hope to see you there. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour and to Rhonda Fanning and Katie Mattson for on-air production in Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for listening and contributing.